And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to what in the world is happening as Minnesota wins in Lincoln as a double-digit underdog in a 24-17 victory over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. A lot to get into with that game. But before we do, Luke, do you want to give the folks a fine word from our sponsor?
Yeah. So the Goal Line, again, sponsored the entire 2020 season, no matter how long or how short it was. So if you're interested in supporting Gopher football, go to thegoalineclub.org. Make sure you check out, I'm sure they're going to have an event for this now, recent Wisconsin game that we have just heard about. So maybe they'll have an event for this. I haven't heard that yet, but we'll check that out here in detail shortly. Again, goalineclub.org.
I actually can tell you, it sounds like there's going to be a signing day event either on Wednesday or Thursday, and sources close to me tell me I'm going to be involved with that. So there'll be more details to come out. I'm sure it'll be, I'll put it on Twitter or GI, or you can check the Goal Line Club website, but sounds like, I'm going to be doing some kind of Zoom event with the Goal Line Club, and, we can get into some more of that details later, but I know folks are here because they're excited, and, Minnesota is able to win a game that they were certainly not projected to win. And joining us to break it down as always is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, how are things for you today? And I cannot stress to you enough how excited I am to get your take on another revamped Minnesota offensive line.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'm doing well, thank you. And it's kind of exciting to be talking about Big Ten football in mid-December. I don't know if you've ever been able to say that before, but of course, a lot of firsts this year. So it's, but yeah, I'm excited. It was a good win, and there's a lot to go over. So.
All right, so the Gophers obviously win 24-17. They were depleted by 33 players. They were a 10.5-point underdog when we recorded. I don't know what it was at kickoff, but eventually the Gophers came out. They covered the under for me, which I greatly appreciated.
yeah, thanks for throwing that jab at me on the Twitter machine. You love to throw that one at me. That's all right.
I do.
I understand.
I do throw a lot of jabs at you. I'm sorry. But I think the fact of the matter is that the Gophers offense was able to be opportunistic just enough to be able to get the victory here. You know, they took advantage of turnovers by Nebraska. We'll talk about how inept Nebraska's offense was, especially with the forward pass. But in reality, the fact of the matter is that they were down quite a few guys on the offensive line, you know, coming into the season, down Curtis Dunlop and Daniel Fa'alele. And then they were down John Michael Schmidt. They were down the kid from Hutchinson, whose name escapes me at the moment. What's his name again, Ryan?
Axel Rushmeyer.
Axel Rushmeyer. And who else were they down? Were they down anybody else, or am I missing anyone?
Offensively, they were down the top three tight ends and yes. O'Keefe, Bryce Witham,
I was thinking offensive line, but yeah, good point.
Yeah, they were John Michael Schmitz and Axel Rushmeyer, and obviously the big one on offense would be first game without Rashad Bateman as well.
Oh yeah, good point. And he opted out. So, you know, offensively, this is probably the most depleted you've seen them, but they still had kind of the mainstays in Mo Ibrahim, Tanner Morgan, and obviously Chris Ottman Bell. Let's get into this, especially with this revamped offensive line. Let's really start there. You know, they have to come up with something on the fly. So maybe Ryan, you can lay out, you know, who's playing, and then Derek can give us his assessment on what we saw out of this group.
Yeah. So to kind of give a synopsis here, if you'll remember, the projected offensive line for Minnesota coming into the year was this. It was going to be Sam Schluter, Connor Olson, John Michael Schmitz, Blaze Andries, Daniel Fa'alele, and Curtis Dunlap, six offensive linemen. Everyone here listening knows how much Minnesota likes to go to it. Well, the last time Minnesota played before Nebraska was against Purdue. They were down two of those starters in Fa'alele and Dunlap, who obviously haven't played all year. So their starting offensive line was Schluter, Axel Rushmeyer, John Michael Schmitz, Connor Olson, Blaze Andries, and then your sixth offensive lineman was Nathan Bowe. So what it looked like yesterday against Nebraska was four of your projected starters from that ideal scenario where Fa'alele doesn't opt out, Dunlap doesn't get hurt, and then Axel and John Michael got popped with COVID. So you're down four offensive line starters. So your offensive line yesterday was Sam Schluter at left tackle, Connor Olson at left guard, Nathan Bowe, Lakeville zone, making his first career start at center, the redshirt sophomore. You had Blaze Andries at right guard, sliding in from right tackle. And then it was true freshman Ariante Ursary getting his first career start at right tackle. And then we also got to see the first meaningful appearance from number 50 there, J.J. Gaudet, who rotated in, I believe, in 25 snaps or so offensively. So a lot of moving parts. And, you know, I'll let Derek get into it. And, you know, I know I have some questions for him. But you look up at the end of the day, Minnesota still rushes for over 200 yards somehow. And I'll get into some of the statistics about that. But Tanner Morgan, never sacked on 30 dropbacks. And there are some holes that Minnesota is able to open on that final drive that I think you can credit to the offensive line. But Derek, you're the guru. You're the reason why people click listen on this podcast. I know I've had a lot of people ask me, what are your thoughts on what you saw from Minnesota's revamped offensive line yesterday?
Well, I think overall it was actually a pretty physical game up front with Minnesota's front seven and Nebraska's defensive front seven. But I can give you kind of a little bit of my input on each of those new guys. I thought J.J. Gaudet looked like a guy that's a little bit tentative. I thought he held his own, and I thought Minnesota did pretty well with that package, bringing in an extra offensive lineman. But I've talked about it several times on this podcast. It's a little early to judge, you know, when a guy's in there and he's not confident 100% in his reads, he's going to be a little bit less physical. So I think as time goes on, I would look for that young man to be a little bit more physical, played with a little bit of a high pad level, but you can see there's some athleticism there. And I think he has a future to grow into and, you know, see what things, how he develops after a few games. I think at center, Bo, you lose a little bit of mobility with John Michael Schmitz. I mean, that's his strength, and that's not Bo's strength. But again, as Luke pointed out before we started recording today, did a good job with the snap, did a good job with the line calls, and kind of held his own in the middle. And then at right tackle, I think there's, potential for a really bright future from Ariante. He's, guy making his first start. He wasn't perfect. And I think the things that he struggled with, Ryan, you and I talked about this after the game, were things that were correctable. So I thought he played with a little bit of a high pad level. That's correctable. I thought he wasn't 100% sure in his calls. He had a couple missed assignments, or at least was tentative. That's going to come with experience. Now, the upside is, I thought of all the new faces that we saw, he impressed me the most with his footwork. So you're playing out a tackle. That's the first thing that coaches look at. That's the first thing that scouts look at out of an offensive lineman. You get a lot of guys up front that are big, a lot of guys up front that are strong, but how can they move their feet and how athletic are they? That's sort of what separates guys at this Power 5 level, this Big 10 level, and then of course the next level in the NFL. And there's some foundation there to grow, because I was really impressed with his footwork. And I know you caught a couple things, Ryan, on film, that the couple plays that you saw, there were some flashes there. So all in all, again, a physical game on the offensive line. We can get into the X's and O's as we go on, but it was nice to see. And by the end of the game, they had racked up some good yards on the ground.
Yeah. And I think I agree with Derek Burns and an offensive line, or just an overall assessment would be, I think you can see with Gaudet, the frame is there, the length is there. I think he is certainly has the ability to be more mobile, but he needs to add strength. There needs to be, and he's still just a redshirt freshman, but there needs to be more oomph behind that punch. If he's going to be able to wash down a five technique, if he's going to be able to set into a defensive end that's trying to rush the passer, but at least you saw him get some meaningful game action yesterday. I am all in on Ariante Ursary in 2022. I'm here for it. And that's a good thing, because, I've talked about it on Gopher Illustrated a lot in the last week. I am a little bit skeptical about what life could potentially look like on the offensive line after 21, with a lot of bodies could be potentially leaving, and Minnesota needs some kind of cornerstone pieces to build around, not named Curtis Dunlap. And I think you can see that once Ursary continues to build his strength and continues to build his core, he is incredibly light on his feet for a 290, 300 pound man. And, the kind of the coup de grace would be him. So on that final drive for Minnesota, where they're finally able to salt a game away, everyone here will remember Mo Ibrahim's long run where he's able to burst through 30 yards, kind of puts the game really in doubt before another first down immediately salts it. Well, I know that I have the GIF on Gopher Illustrated and the GIF rewinds. Ariante from his right tackle position is able to come all the way across and reach a three tech. So for those of you who don't know who the three tech is, he's the guy that is going to be on Ariante's. Well, here, let me, Derek, you know, I'm gonna have to go back and look at the GIF. Was he a one tech or a three tech there?
Three tech. Yeah. So he was a defensive tackle lined up on the right guard's outside shoulder.
Correct. And he's able to get across. And that was a big human being. That was like a 325 pound defensive tackle. And he's able to use that speed and agility and get him, and he can turn him. And then Mo just follows the lane, and I'm here for it. I mean, that was a tough assignment for him in his first game going against a very physical and big offensive line. And then with Bo, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, he's still in year three, and we'll see how he continues to develop. I just don't know that the athleticism and the mobility, I mean, you can certainly see from John Michael Schmitz to Nathan Bo, it's a lot different. But John Michael Schmitz is also a couple years older, so we'll see how Bo continues to develop. But, Derek, what did you see Minnesota do differently, I guess, in the running game yesterday? Because obviously we've talked about it at length. They're down as many guys as they were on the offensive line, and maybe most importantly there too, their top three tight ends were all out, and Co-Keefe, Jake Paulson, and Bryce Witham, a.k.a. the three guys that played all the snaps against Purdue. So how did you see Mike Stanford kind of change things in the running game without two offensive linemen, their top three tight ends, and, oh, by the way, they still don't have Rashad Bateman?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, I think that the running game was affected negatively without Rashad Bateman on the field. And we can talk about the passing game, and maybe there were some positives to take out of that. But what it really allowed Nebraska to play things differently in the front. So what Nebraska did with their front seven is they used an even box in run situations, but they took an outside linebacker who would normally be cheated out in pass protection. They ran predominantly zone, and they used him to set the edge and play the run. So that, in my opinion, you would not have seen that if Rashad Bateman were playing in the game. They would have an extra defender playing the pass. So that really, it took Minnesota and the coaching staff a little while to figure out what was going on, because Nebraska was using opposite the tight end, so a defensive end lined up on a tackle, was using that, lined him up on the outside shoulder, but he was actually playing the B gap. So post-snap, he was jumping down into the B gap, getting penetration, and they were using that outside linebacker to take the outside or to seal the edge. And so that really threw off Minnesota's running game, particularly trying to get anything outside. Took them a while to figure that out. Now, by doing that, they're leaving themselves in single pass coverage on the outside, particularly on the weak side. So Minnesota figured this out a little later in the game and adjusted to it. But to answer your question, Ryan, this ended up having Minnesota run a lot of RPO runs as opposed to outside zones, straight up inside zones, things like that. Now, as the game went on, they started running and cutting back towards the tight end. But that's what I saw different in this game is effectively post-snap, Nebraska was playing a plus one box at least some of the time. And so that, I think, slowed down. And that's why, frankly, I think you saw a lot of those 2- and 3- and 4-yard runs where in previous games, you know, you're talking about an 8-, 9-, 10-yard run, explosive game, things like that. So Nebraska was able to hold things in check. And as the game went on, they adjusted. They found some things. For example, the Cam Wiley explosive game long run, they ended up running into the boundary, fanning out an H-back to take care of that outside linebacker. And now they had numbers outside, and it was Cam against the safety. So they did adjust to it, but started out with a lot of RPO runs and just kind of were given fits by that outside linebacker until they were able to adjust.
So in that running game, we saw the Gophers amass 206 yards on 43 carries. Mo Ibrahim was definitely hampered at some point, you know, by a couple of injuries. Maybe didn't get nearly the number of carries we saw, but we saw a good distribution between he, Trace, and Potts. Even they mixed in some two back there with Bryce Williams as well. Also Tanner Morgan, we can't overlook this, the fact that he actually kept the ball. I believe it was maybe even for a first down. I can't remember exactly how many yards he had, but it was very effective. The fact of the matter is, you know, they were able to do, even though they had to continue to stick with it, they were able to find success in that running game when very early it was very difficult. Any things you want to touch on, Ryan, with regards to the running game before it moves to the passing game?
Yeah. You know, I was kind of digging into the numbers of the running game, because you look at it at the end of the day and, you know, it says 43 carries for essentially 5 yards a carry and a couple of touchdowns. I'm just thinking to myself, boy, it didn't feel like that.
No, it didn't.
And so, well, here's the thing. It's because you know, Minnesota, if you take out the three kneel downs at the end of the game, had 40 rushing attempts. Minnesota gained. Okay. No, I want you to stay with me here. They had 5 carries that totaled 141 yards. Okay. So that means you had the other 35 carries, they went for 71 yards. So it was incredibly boom or bust. I mean, if that's not the definition of, you know, 35 of the 40 carries, AKA 88% of the carries went nowhere. But it was those 12%, those 5 carries, the Cam Wiley around the right edge, the Mo Ibrahim up the middle to salt it away, the Mo Ibrahim touchdown run. I mean, it was incredibly, I'd say inefficient would be the right word to do it. Now, some of that is to be understood with where Minnesota was at, with sans their top three tight ends and what the offensive line situation was. But I just found it fascinating that it truly was. It was going to be 1 yard, 2 yards, or, you know, boom. You're able to turn the corner and Cam Wiley is able to get 61, or Ibrahim's able to find some room up the middle and slip through. And I think the only thing I'd note would be you can still see the change when you look at the running backs. Now, Ibrahim is battling something, I think, in his shoulder. Fleck kept talking about after the game, they're trying to do something with special pads to see what's comfortable and what's not. And I mean, I've never heard of something like that, but, you know, they showed a clip of Mo on the sidelines doing some shoulder tests with the trainer. And as a former college football player who tore both of his labrums, both posterior and anterior, I don't know what the special pad would be that they're referencing. So I don't know what kind of injury it is, but you can see the difference between Ibrahim running in this zone running scheme and say Bryce Williams. There was a third down play that I wish Mo was in for, because Bryce doesn't see the hole that's opening there. And if he does, it's a first down on third down and he doesn't see it. He gets tackled at the line. It's a 1 yard gain. Minnesota goes for it on fourth down because their kicker, apparently, we'll get into the kicking situation a little bit later, but they even had the win at their back for that one. And Morgan gets pressure in his face and he gets batted down at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, that's a play where maybe if Ibrahim was in, or hell, even Trey Potts, I think that may have been a first down. But it was nice to see both Potts and Wiley have success. Now, we've talked about at length on this podcast about how Wiley is your one cut and go. And you saw, and I mean, that can't be any more evident, where Cam Wiley just kind of veers. I wouldn't even say cuts. He veers around the right edge and then runs straight. I mean, he runs through some contact and he just goes. And then you saw the Trace and Potts almost touchdown that I'm still not sure that it wasn't a touchdown, where Nathan Bowe gets beaten at the center position immediately. And Potts just stops on a dime and he's able to run right at the goal line. And I wish PJ Fleck wouldn't have gone hurry up there, but it's something to where you can see that Wiley and Potts are getting better. And I would thought it was, you know, it obviously wasn't by design, but how nice was it, Derek, to kind of see on that final drive, you look up, Mo's only got 15 carries. And it's like, well, yeah, because he's been injured and he's been on and off. But it's like, instead of Mo getting his 35th and 36th carries of the game right here, he's getting his 16th and 17th. And I think you could see him with that freshness in his legs really pay dividends there. But is there anything else you want to touch on the running game before we move to the passing game, Derek?
Well, I did want to mention, you covered it, but I did want to mention that I thought Cam Wiley was a little bit better with his vision in this game. Wasn't as predetermined with his runs, and I think that's a slow improvement. I mean, this is the cool thing about college football is it's fun to watch these guys develop. And, you know, there is still, of course, a gap there, and I feel like I need to defend you a little bit, Ryan. I know you take a lot of heat with Mo, and you know you weren't hot on
him. You better be careful here, because you better be careful.
Hear me out. So hear me out. I mean, this is ultimately, you know, a big credit to Mo, but this is college football, and this is one of the differences between college and pro football. Mo continues, even in this year compared to even last year, he continues to improve. I mean, he's just on a level now. We talked about it earlier in the season where I think his visions it's as good as any running back that I have ever seen for Gopher football. I mean, David Cobb would have been probably the best vision guy that I can remember. You know, Lawrence Maroney probably had the best physical tools, but I think his vision is beyond David Cobb's now, and his running instincts are the best I've ever seen. But here's my defense of you, Ryan. This wasn't Mo in year one. I mean, he's continued to get better. Now, was he, you know, an ordinary guy in his first year? No, he was still pretty good, but he just continues to get better. So my defense of you is, you know, you weren't hot on him early on. You've admitted your mistakes, but he gets better every year. So, you know, perhaps when he first started out, maybe he wasn't comfortable. Maybe he didn't see the things that he does now. And it's a credit to him because he continues to get better every year. Some guys hit a ceiling. I mean, some guys, how good they are as a freshman is generally as good as they are 2-3 years later. You know, maybe, you know, if they're relying 100% on their athletic skills and not developing some of these other small skills, that's as good as they're going to be. Not so with him. So there's still a gap there, but that's a credit to him because he just continues to get better. We're just lucky to have him.
He is, you know, so fun to watch. And that's where you mention it. I don't know that I've seen a player improve as quickly and he has improved, I think, more than any player I think I've covered in the last 9 years. Now, if there's someone that I'm just forgetting off the top of my head, please feel free to call me out, either one of you. But Ibrahim's transformation from freshman year to where he's at right now is just, I mean, he is a special, special player, Luke.
I will give you one name, and then we can transition topics. I do think that Justice Harris maybe has had the most drastic improvement one year to the next that I've ever seen.
Okay, not in the last 9 years of Justice Harris has been – Justice Harris has gone from an absolute liability early in his career to now he is incredibly solid.
Mm-hmm.
He's been very, very good in run defense. He really hasn't been tested in pass defense. But Justice Harris, certainly for the Gopher defense, absolutely without question, is the number one most improved player this year.
All right. So before we talk a little passing game, we probably should talk about insurance and how one can improve their insurance going into this new year, Ryan.
Well, just like Saturday was incredibly unexpected and very challenging for Minnesota with the number of players they had out, the one thing you really can count on, folks, is having the right protection and an insurance agent on your side. And that's where the Burns Insurance Agency, my father, Bill Burns, is the company to help with life's unexpected events. Now, whether that's an auto accident, a broken water pipe at your home or business, the Burns Insurance Agency will have you covered. Now, his independent insurance agency has access to over 20 different insurance companies to shop for the best coverage at the best price. So with the holiday season now upon us, let the Burns Insurance Agency do the insurance shopping for you this year to make sure you're getting the best deal for your buck and you're getting the best coverage so everyone or everything in your life is protected. So if you want to learn more, go to insurancebyburns.com or shoot him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's look at this Gopher passing game. You know, I think the stats are a bit deceiving here in how well Tanner Morgan played. He was 17 of 30 for 181 yards. He did have the touchdown to Span Ford. But in reality, I think there were throws that were there that, you know, guys just didn't make didn't make catches on, and they were just flat out drops, right? I think easily he could have had 20 to 21 completions, and then there you're hovering at about 66%, which, you know, that's pretty much all you can ask of Tanner Morgan in that situation, you know, given how ineffective at times the running game was. But, you know, they were able to find some semblance of balance on offense, you know, 30 rushing attempts to 40, or sorry, 30 passing attempts to 43 rushing attempts. But curious to get your guys' thoughts. I know I made this comment that in some ways I felt like the passing game was almost better without Rashad Bateman, more so from the fact that they didn't focus in on him so much. That's maybe a little bit of a hot take, but Derek, I want to get your thoughts on what you saw in this passing game.
Well, I think what you're pointing out is, you know, we're kind of back to an offense that's you know, designed to throw to the guy that's open on the play. You know, Rashad Bateman was so good. There were times you could throw to him in coverage, and he was able to come away with a lot of catches, and you wanted to do that to take advantage of this talent. But, you know, it's no secret that this RPO style passing attack is predicated on reading the defense pre and post snap and deciding, you know, who's good at making the defense make a decision and then adjusting and throwing to the open receiver. And I think we're sort of going back to that, and we saw that on Saturday. You know, Nebraska played a lot of zone. They showed that against Purdue the week prior. I think it took the Gophers offensive coaching staff a little while to settle into their route trees and decide how they wanted to attack things. But ultimately, you know, if you're facing a zone passing team, you're going to put pressure on your quarterback to hit his spots, you know, to find those pockets in the zone. And I thought, to your point, Luke, I thought Tanner missed two or three throws. Other than that, I thought he was on. I mean, there were a lot of drops. He hit a lot of pockets, and he hit his spots for the most part. And, you know, I think that was largely the difference in the game, probably, throwing things downfield. So, yeah, it was nice to see, you know, see them stretch the safeties and then throw underneath it with dig routes and slant routes. I mean, that's where they had such success last year. And so it was good to see a return to form in that way.
All right. So I guess one thing, Ryan, I know that you have sung the praises of Brevin Spanford, especially in the red zone, and he finally gets a touchdown this season.
Gets a target.
That's fair. That's totally fair. He gets the touchdown on the four-yard reception. High points the ball. You know, his length is going to be a differentiator between he and any defensive back. A huge advantage for him. A great ball from Tanner Morgan on the lone touchdown through the passing game yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's me taking my victory lap on Brevin Spanford with like his four catches for. Does he have any, even four catches this year? Does he even have four targets this year?
I don't know.
I mean, that's a whole discussion for this offseason about how Sanford isn't using the tight ends. Again, here's my thing. If you weren't going to use Brevin Spanford without Rashad Bateman now, like Brevin Spanford gets one target of 30 targets. Okay. Okay. But passing game wise, you know, I had some interesting takes, and it's weird to me how much Gopher Twitter really just doesn't like Tanner Morgan. They think he's regressed. I had a couple people just be like, Tanner stinks. Let's see Zach. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what are you watching the other side of the game where Nebraska is incapable of completing a forward pass of 10 yards or longer? Whereas Tanner is making some of these throws, like the batted balls to me isn't necessarily on Tanner. You look at a couple, I think he had three balls batted on the day. Two of them, he absolutely had guys immediately in his face, including a fourth down one where the guy, I mean, if you put your arm out in front of your body right now, folks, that's how far away that guy was. Yet Tanner stood there in the pocket and tried to make the throw, and the kid just got his hand on it. And it just kind of is what it is. But Luke, you mentioned, was Tanner perfect? No. Did he make some of the throws when he needed to make some of the throws? You're absolutely right. I was just really happy to see Mike Sanford on that final freaking drive after he goes into his turtle shell again. He comes out throwing and he goes with a boot, and he gets Tanner on the run, and he connects with Clay Geary for a first down. And you can't tell me that didn't open things up again in the run game, where then Mo gets a first down two times later, and then Minnesota's able to kind of salt it away. But I still want to see more from this passing offense. I mean, we saw Chris Ottman Bell get the targets. I thought there were far too many drop balls from guys like Seth Green, Michael Brown Stevens, Daniel Jackson, something to where that needs to obviously improve and it needs to get better. So I still just, with this entire offense here before we transition to defense, I can't explain the whole Mike Sanford play call switch with like 7 seconds left. I just can't. And especially on one of those timeouts, Minnesota had been standing there looking at the sidelines with something like 25 seconds left in the play clock. Sanford just has to trust what he sees out there, and he has to stop getting in a play call with 7 seconds left. I mean, you can't expect Tanner to then run up to the line, yell out the new play, yell out to the boundary, to the receivers, tell the running back, then get reset. Then I mean, it's Sanford has to be better. And two timeouts on that specific instance of not getting the play call in, it's inexplicable to me. I know it's something I'm going to ask Fleck about. I know it's something that I'm going to ask Sanford about because it needs to change. It certainly needs to change to me.
Okay, so maybe we should transition. Before we transition to defense, Derek, I just want to get your thoughts on the Wildcat package in this game. We didn't talk about it in the running game. I know that they found success at least one touchdown, maybe more than one. But for the most part, this short yardage situation has been largely successful. But in this game, largely what I saw is this is probably the worst from an efficiency standpoint we've seen this package. Is this just largely a function of the changes at the offensive line, or did Nebraska do something different that we haven't seen?
Well, I think that what you're starting to see is teams just go all out run blitz against that mm-hmm. package. So the answer, of course, would be to run a play action out of it and throw out of it, or at least send some guys out of that formation into passing. You know, you've got to keep them on us essentially. So I think you're right, though, where they're getting a lot of pressure is on the edges. And this started with, racking my brain, I think the Purdue game. So, and maybe a fourth down stop where they got stuffed. It's a numbers game. So that's what Wildcat gets you, an extra blocker in the box. You see they motion a guy in. And actually, the touchdown, Mo's first touchdown was a misalignment from Nebraska's. They were misaligned on the play side, and Mo essentially breaks through for, I think it was a fourth and short, and he ends up running into the end zone. So that's what you're trying to do, is get the defense misaligned and find a numbers game and where they just can't defend it. But you're seeing a lot of edge pressure from the outside just on run blitzes. And obviously the way to counteract that is you've got to run play action. So hopefully we see that next game.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of Gophers defense here. This, you know, if you look at the points, this is by far the best outcome the Gophers have had all season. Even statistically, they were pretty strong against Nebraska. Even though Nebraska was able to amass 308 yards of total offense. But this was in large part Nebraska kind of killing themselves too. They had two turnovers on the day. Additionally, as Ryan mentioned, they struggled with the forward pass, specifically outside of 5 yards, maybe even 10 yards if we're trying to be really nice to them. Largely the defense did the job that they needed to do. They didn't kill other than the big one, or the long Wandell Moore play. They didn't give up huge plays for the most part. But I guess, what did we see out of the defense? I know that the color commentator and play-by-play guy gave Mariano Sorry-Marin a lot of credit, probably deserved, but maybe this is his best game. I don't know. What did you think, Ryan?
I thought that Mariano did play really well in terms of what expectations had been for him. I thought that was his best game of the season. I mean, we've talked about him at length on this podcast here, not being very good. And I thought he played as well as he's played all year. And it was nice to see, because I thought that Minnesota's defensive line played about as well as we've seen them play all year in two aspects. Number one, the defensive ends did as good of a job as I've seen all year of setting an edge. Whether it was them or the slot corner, Justice Harris, Minnesota did as good of a job funneling everything back towards the middle of the field and not allowing them to escape around the edges. And where does Mariano Soria-Marin live? Well, he's literally the Mike linebacker, a.k.a. the middle linebacker, a.k.a. the middle of the field. And that's where he was able to make plays yesterday. And I thought he tackled well. But the other thing that the defensive line, I thought, did so well was they were able to get penetration, and they were also able to shed blocks. And it didn't seem like the offensive line for Nebraska was able to work up to the second level as much because they were struggling with the defensive line for Minnesota. And so that allowed Mariano Soria-Marin to get some cleaner runs to the ball carrier. We also saw Mariano dip around some offensive linemen and make some plays. And again, credit to him, because again, I'm sure he's well aware of what his season performance has been overall. You're happy to see that, you know, he's improving, and he had himself a game yesterday. But Derek, what did you think about Mariano? And was there anything you thought I missed in terms of with Minnesota's run defense overall?
Well, I, to be honest, I think I need to start with a confession. I mean, looking at the matchup going into the game, I really did not think it favored Minnesota's defense. I mean, if you look at Nebraska's previous games, what they do well on offense is just happens to be what Minnesota's defense has struggled defending. I mean, a lot of the same concepts that hurt them in the Maryland game are what Nebraska likes to run. So I frankly did not think that the Gopher defense was going to have a good day, and I couldn't have been more wrong. And for a lot of the reasons you mentioned, I mean, I just think, in addition to what you've said, I thought it was mentally their sharpest game of the year, particularly in run defense. You know, their run fits and all gaps being covered was very important against a Nebraska offense that's, you know, based on things like misdirection, and they try to get you out of your gap, and that's where they hit you for a big gain. And I thought it was mentally just really sharp. So that was a huge credit to the Gopher coaching staff. And then, you know, the only thing I would add too is we've talked about in their struggles that there was a lot of reading and reacting, and which leaves you playing slower. And I thought this was the fastest the defensive front seven had played. And what that tells me is they're more confident in their assignments and more confident in their fits. And so like Mariano's a perfect example, much less reading and reacting, much less play diagnosis. It was, you know, post snap, it was take a look, read your keys, and go. I mean, he was running things down on the sideline, making plays outside, which has been a struggle for him at times. And so it was really fun to see. And again, it was not expected on my part. I was wrong. I mean, they matched up well, and they came with a good game plan and executed well.
Well, here's what I'll also say is we talked about in the pre-production meeting, fellas. I mean, it, as well as Minnesota played run defensive wise. I mean, you still look up at the end of the day and Nebraska nearly rushes for 200 yards and over 5 yards a carry. But considering how horrible Minnesota's run defense had been, that's an improvement. I guess my question is, I watched back the game this morning for GI's Gift Rewinds, and it was just like, what was Nebraska's offensive game plan? Because they were obviously struggling with the forward pass. Minnesota was struggling to contain Adrian Martinez in the pocket. And they just almost inexplicably to me, when the game was still well within reach, just abandoned the run, even though that's where they were having success, and they went to the pass. So, I mean, Luke, can you figure that one out for me? Because, I mean, to say that didn't help Minnesota win this football game, I think wouldn't be accurate.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference here, like I think that the Maryland game is a good comp, right? Because you know, what Maryland's trying to do is, you know, go east to west, spread you out, you know, show some variety. And what you saw here is Nebraska would try and do some similar things. The end of the day, they just couldn't execute, and it was 100% on their quarterback. In my opinion, because there were guys open, there was nothing. It wasn't like guys weren't able to get open. They weren't able to get separation like we've seen in years past with Gopher wide receivers or Gopher tight ends. This was 100% a function of they couldn't make the throws. And if you're going to find some semblance of balance, you need to be able to complete those passes. And you know, Martinez's stat line too is a little deceiving. He's 16 of 27, but how many of those are effectively glorified runs. They're, you know, a couple pop passes, couple really short throws, right? I was not impressed with Martinez in any way, shape, or form in the passing game. And then why in the world are they having Luke McCaffrey throw two balls? Both could have easily been an interception. Only one was. I couldn't understand what they were trying to do offensively. I think, Ryan, you bring up a great point. Is like, what was the game plan there from them? I don't know, Derek, from your perspective, could you deduce if there was a game plan, or did they get so off script from the beginning that they just fumbled around to find an identity?
Yeah, I mean, it at least before it got to be a two-score game, it was a little bit head-scratching. I mean, we've been doing this podcast for 3 or 4 years now, and I continue to be surprised with Nebraska's coaching staff. I know Scott Frost is kind of a lightning rod, and I don't really want to go there, but I'm really surprised with the resources they have and the emphasis that they place. That frankly, I've just not been impressed with their coaching staff and then their scheming and game plans. You know, last year at Minnesota, the defensive game plan I thought was pretty bad. I mean, Minnesota, I don't want to take too much away from the Gophers, but I mean, Minnesota ran up and down the field on them, and, you know, they just fundamentally were very unsound. And then flip forward to this year, and Ryan said it, I going into the game, I mean, I was sure that they were going to run a lot of quarterback runs, a lot of misdirection in the backfield. And that was probably the most effective thing they did all game, but they just didn't do it very much. And I don't know why. So I just thought it was a poor job by their coaching staff, frankly, as some of the game planning and scheming. And again, don't want to take away from the execution on the Gophers defensive side, but I don't have any good answers for you. Now, as the game went on, of course, you get into a two-score lead, and that's the problem. You can't throw the ball downfield. You're not able to come back when you're down two scores. But yeah, leading up to that, I'm just not sure why they didn't mix in more of some of those things that were successful for them.
Because, I mean, yes, the pass was open for them. I mean, we saw Mariano Sorry-Marin lined up on Wandale Robinson that solicited a PJ Fleck timeout. Then we saw it again, but Martinez overthrew him. Then we saw Oliver Martin get open a couple times and busted coverages, can't make the throw. And it's just like, what? I mean, yeah, I guess credit to the Gopher defense because it was an incomplete pass. But it's just like, go ahead, Luke.
I don't know if you can actually say credit to the Gopher defense in that situation. I mean, they didn't execute, right?
That's on
Martinez, right? Like, he had throws, and like even for McCaffrey, that's his execution, right? Like they just have to execute, right? The play developed the way it should have, in exactly how they wanted it to. It's just the Gophers didn't put him in a position. You got to give the Gophers credit though too, is they made plays when they needed to, right? They forced the fumble. They also got the interception. Newbin made a catch. You know, he could have easily dropped it, right? That's where you got to give the Gophers credit.
Yeah, a horrible McCaffrey pass, and yeah, Newbin is able to.
Newbin should have picked both of those off, right? Like, Newbin redeemed himself. He probably should have picked off the first one, right? Let's also be honest. And the Gophers did find ways to win, right? And like, Boye Mafe won time and time again with speed, right? Especially in some of those passing situations, we need to give him some credit there.
We do. I mean, Boye had himself a game, and he needed to because Minnesota was struggling to generate pressure. He obviously missed the last game against Purdue because he had COVID, but then Minnesota has their next two games canceled. So he's eligible to return in this game. And no, it was Boye Mafe with some Twin City on Twin City crime. It was the Hopkins kid and Boye Mafe going against Lakeville North's Bryce Benhart there at right tackle, and turns the corner on him once to force a strip sack fumble where Minnesota is able to turn that into points. And then he's able to turn the corner again on third down so Minnesota can get off the field. And, you know, Boye, I think, has a ceiling unlike anybody else on this Gopher roster, because when it clicks for him in those pass rushing situations, I mean, it clicks. And that's where you can see the 6'4 and twitch and the physicality and the bending ability where, you know, if things continue to trend right for him, he's going to be an NFL player next year probably. And that's exciting for this defense because they need an NFL pass rusher on it, especially as You know, things continue to move forward. But it was something to where, you know, you're excited to see it. You know, I thought that D'Angelo Carter and Rashad Chaney on the inside also had some moments at times. I just think overall, I think Derek hit it on the head. Mentally, for this Gopher defense, that was as fast as we've seen them play. And I think the defining moment for this defense yesterday was that fourth quarter where, you know, I guess three things I would say. Number one, you look up at the end of the day, this defense only allows four third down conversions on 13 Nebraska third downs. That's pretty good. That's about as good as it's been all year. You also look, Nebraska has four trips into the red zone. They only emerged with 13 points. Again, there was a missed field goal and some other things there, but 13 points on four red zone trips is pretty good. And then you look at, you know, special teams not helping the team. That's where on that fourth quarter where Minnesota's defense forces a field goal attempt, and then special teams lines up offsides to give Nebraska a fresh set of downs. Well, they came back and they performed well. They got Nebraska to waste another 2 minutes of time on the clock. And they still forced a field goal. They didn't allow them to get into the end zone. So that's where we were seeing a lot more of that bend, don't break defense yesterday. And I don't think it's any coincidence, as Derek said, that this defense just had their best mental game of the year, where there weren't as many blown assignments, there weren't as many blown run fits, and they just played a lot faster. And so that's exciting to see from a defense that has been struggling immensely this year.
All right. Anything you want to touch on, Derek, that we maybe missed defensively before we transition to special teams and looking forward?
I would just echo what Ryan said about this was the first game of the year we've seen backfield penetration from the defensive line. And so the two guys that I noticed, Keontae Shad and D'Angelo Carter, a lot of good flashes in there. And again, I don't want to beat it. I guess I am beating a dead horse. To me, that's a sign of guys growing up, getting comfortable with their assignment and playing fast, because it's the disruption in the opposite team's running game that is what that creates. And that's what's just been lacking sorely. And we can talk about run fits all day long, but when you get a running back taking the handoff 4 yards deep in the backfield and running with a head of steam, and he doesn't have to make his first cut until he's past the line of scrimmage, good things don't usually happen. So that was to me a big standout in this game, the first game that we saw some of that backfield penetration.
All right. So real quickly, before we transition to talk special teams and looking forward to this game against Wisconsin, another word from the Goal Line Club. Again, if you want to check out the events that they are going to have here, I do believe this one with you, Ryan, is going to be digital, I would assume, right?
It is. It's going to be on Wednesday or Thursday, done via Zoom. I think it's going to be me talking about National Signing Day, which coming up on Wednesday as well. I think there's a possibility I'll have a Gopher coach there as well. We'll be able to kind of talk X's and O's from the Nebraska game, look at the Wisconsin game, and because the kids will all be signed by then, I'll also be able to ask them on the record about some of the kids that they were able to sign this latest recruiting class. So there's still more details that have to be worked out here. Like I said, if you're a GI member, I'll have all the information on the boards. If you are not, and you just follow me in this podcast on the Twitter machine, I'm sure I'll be retweeting something from the Goal Line Club. But that's kind of the immediate event from what I've been told, Luke, is we're going to do some kind of a hybrid Wisconsin preview / National Signing Day / Gopher Coach or something. So there will be more details to come on GoalLineClub.org.
Yeah, make sure you check out GoalLineClub.org, and if not, maybe consider being a member. All right, so let's talk a little special teams. I know during our game text thread with one of our cohorts, Ryan, he was keen to point out that in the first half there were no special team blunders. You know, that obviously didn't hold throughout the game. But all in all, special teams kind of had an up and down day yesterday.
I'm shocked to learn that the special teams had an up and down day. Now, here's what I'll say, and I wrote about it after the game for 5 takeaways on GI would be, you look at Mark Crawford, Minnesota's punter, best day in a Gopher uniform that he's had, 4 punts on the day, 3 of them down inside the 15. That's awesome. What's not awesome is the one he needed to flip the field. You know, it was only able to be 38 yards. And that's where we need to talk about this whole win thing, because everybody is making it sound like it was an absolute, I mean, it's, everybody makes it sound like there was like 50 mile an hour winds. If you watch the shots that they would show on TV of, you know, the field, you could see the flags, the top of the stadium. Yeah, they were ripping. But you look at the flags on top of the goalposts, they were barely moving. And it's just like, I think the wind thing was entirely overblown. It's like a 10 mile an hour wind, according to what the meteorologists would say. But, you know, we'll get into that here in a minute. We saw in the ever evolving game of what in the world is happening with Minnesota's kicking situation, Minnesota State Mankato transfer. And Luke, I'm going to let you have the first crack at how you pronounce this name.
I don't even have it up. Where do
check your G chat.
My G chat. Okay. Hold on. Pulling up my G chat. Oh goodness. Anders Galinsky.
I don't know. There's a J at the end and I got no idea. I gotta do that thing, man.
I gotta imagine that silent. I'm going Anders Galinsky.
Okay. Well, he was the kicker yesterday. He made all three extra points in his lone field goal attempt. No idea what's going on with Brock Walker. Michael Lance is already out for the year. Grant Rierse, is he even still on the roster at this point? Like, it's just, let's go for special teams. And I will also mention, I mean, hey, kickoff coverage was good. I mean, it's 2 weeks in a row where kickoff coverage and the two lone returns, it didn't go anywhere, and they actually gained field position for the defense. Now, there's still some bad because Minnesota's special teams. The return game continues to make me incredibly sad. We almost did it, Luke. We almost did it because we talked about in the preview, what did I want the return team to do? Never return anything because nothing good ever happens. And Cam Wiley tries to return one, and he loses it either in the sun or with the wind, and he costs the team 12 yards field position. And I also noted when I watched the game back this morning, he was replaced for the rest of the game again on kickoff return. Cam Wiley has to hold the record for number of benchings on kickoff return, man, in a single season. This is about the fourth time I've seen him be benched on kickoff return, and I cannot tell you why they continue to throw him out there. If you have been benched three or four times mid-game as a returner, why are they continuing to throw you out there? I just cannot figure it out at this point. We also saw Philip Howard nearly lose a punt return where he returned it. He tried to field it inside the 10. It bounced off him, stayed in bounds, and you know, he was able to fall on it. He also got crushed on the other one. So Minnesota has negative punt return yards yesterday, which sounds about par for the course. And then we talked about it earlier, Minnesota's field goal block, of which they didn't even try to block it, it lined up offsides to give Nebraska a fresh set of downs, which is inexplicable.
Well, okay. When I saw that live, I tried to roll it back, and I didn't actually see him offsides, unless there's a vantage point that I question whether or not that was actually offsides personally. But
all he's got to do is look to his right or his left, whichever is towards the sidelines, and say, yo, am I good? And you point at the ref, and he either gives you thumbs up, gives you a thumbs up, where he says move back, and you do.
Yeah.
I mean, either way, that could have been Nebraska did score on that next possession, but it was called back by a phantom holding call.
Yeah, that wasn't a hold.
So, I mean, one day someone will explain to me with a straight face why Rob Wenger still has a job, but here we are. So, special teams was a mixed bag, but I'll take a mixed bag over a dumpster fire any day of the week.
All right. I want to not talk any more special teams because it's not my favorite topic. So let's look forward as we go. We know now that the Gophers
Before we look forward.
More special teams.
You know, no.
Okay.
It's Gopher Illustrated, because on Wednesday, as we look forward here, 72 hours from now, it's National Signing Day. It is going to be a very busy week for this COVID body of mine. And that's where it's going to be a taxing week, because National Signing Day is on Wednesday, 48, 72 hours from now. And for those of you who want to be in the know of what's going on, I'll tell you right now, Minnesota's got the number 22 recruiting class in the country right now. I believe that's sixth in the Big Ten, which would be the highest Minnesota has finished in a long, long time. possibly the internet era. They got 7 4 stars committed, and we're still kind of waiting to see here what Davon Townley and the Minneapolis North 4-star defensive end wants to do. So, you know, I've kind of made the promise to my GI people that I will not really talk a lot of recruiting here on this podcast because they want it behind the paywall, and I get it. Mm-hmm. But that's where I'm going to tell you, Luke, it's $1 for 30 days to get behind the paywall here is Gopher hockey's undefeated. Gopher basketball is undefeated. You just had Minnesota win against Nebraska to get to 500, and you got National Signing Day right here. So if you want to be in the know of what's going on, you got $1 for 30 days, or the deal you should take advantage of is it's 60% off an annual right now, which is a $75 savings over the course of an entire year. So you know what that would get you, Luke, actually? You would literally get – so you'd get signing day this year. You get the rest of basketball season. You get spring football. You get the entire 2022 recruiting class. You get the entire 2021 season of football coverage. And you get all the way to National Signing Day for like something like $35 for an entire year, which is an insane value. So if you want to know more, just go to GI. It's going to be right there on the front page. If you want to join, we'd love to have you.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about this game coming up with Wisconsin. Obviously, concessions have been made all year with the Big Ten about their plans. Initially, they weren't going to play football. They have played football. Initially, you had to meet a certain requirement to make the Big Ten championship game. They waived that. And you were supposed to play your East and West were supposed to match up in the following game, and the Gophers are going to play Wisconsin. You know what? I'm all for it. I'm all for all of those things. The Gophers are going to play Wisconsin. I think they'll be heavily favored. I can't imagine the Gophers are going to get a lot of guys back. But Derek, maybe just start in. Obviously, you talk in years past about how when you play rivalry games, sometimes, you know, what we've seen on the field, you throw out the window preceding it. But what do you expect out of this game with the Gophers in Wisconsin?
Well, first, I'm really happy to see that the Big Ten put this together. I think it's important. It's a rivalry game. It's a close, you know, geographic, you know, game. And there's, for many reasons, the tradition and things like that, for whatever that matters. I think it's just really good to see them do that. So I'm glad they were able to do it. And, you know, what I'm most looking forward to is we've talked about this before is the Minnesota, particularly the offensive coaching staff, tends to struggle against these game management teams, that being Iowa, Wisconsin, Northwestern. Now, in a way, maybe the fact that they're going to be a heavy underdog plays into their favor a little bit because maybe they're not going to be as conservative. I guess, you know, I had the chance to see Wisconsin play a couple times this year, and their defense is incredibly good. Their offense, I don't think is what it has been in the past, but I think it's kind of become a thing that Wisconsin outside of 2018 just tends to play really, really well against Minnesota. And so I think part of that is just that conservativeness and maybe a little bit of intimidation. And having watched Wisconsin play a couple times this year, I just hope that the Gophers, starting with the Gopher coaching staff, that they're just not intimidated. You know, what I don't want to go full into the what do you have to lose cliche, but it would be nice to see them come with a plan of attack, be aggressive, because they don't have anything to lose. It's a rivalry game. It's going to be hard fought. Wisconsin, I hold their coaching staff in very high regard. They're going to have a really sharp game plan. They're going to have Minnesota well scouted. So I'm excited to see the game, and I'm particularly going to be excited to see how aggressive Minnesota is on offense.
And that's where it looks like the opening line for this game is out, and Wisconsin is 2 touchdown favorites, and I get it. But I would know.
Hold on, weren't they 3 touchdown favorites the last time before it was canceled?
Right.
And now what improvement, Ryan?
Yeah,
down 33 players.
Yeah. Graham Mertz is playing awful. And the Wisconsin offense against Iowa was without their starting center, their 2 starting wide receivers, and their starting running back. And Iowa just forced Graham Mertz to throw, and they couldn't make any adjustments. And so that's where I'm with Derek is seemingly every time except 2018. Wisconsin just plays really well against Minnesota. And that's where I want to see Mike Sanford come out with a game plan that actually makes this fan base be like, yeah, we see it. you know, we see why Fleck like you so much. I mean, I just don't want to see. Here's my issue. The matchups for Minnesota look awful on paper because Minnesota's got a makeshift offensive line and Wisconsin's front seven on defense is still really bleeping good. And that concerns me because what if Mike Sanford just wants to run inside outside zone and then it's third and eight and then they can just pin back their ears and Tanner Morgan gets pressure in his face and that's how turnovers happen. And then you look at Wisconsin. I mean, what do they want to do? They want to run the ball with their running back, and especially with Graham Mertz struggling right now. And that's where Minnesota's been hemorrhaging yards per carry to running backs. And coming into this past game, Minnesota was allowing over 9 yards of carry to running backs. Now, I'm sure that's improved a little bit. Maybe it's down to the 7-8 yards of carry range, but, you know, it's got to improve. And that's where, you know, I think, Derek, you were the one that kind of mentioned it to me. But, I mean, there's always games under PJ Fleck now that we've seen where Minnesota's double-digit underdogs or just underdogs in general, where Minnesota doesn't, on paper, or the media or the public or whoever doesn't give them a shot, and they win the game. You look at that 2018 Wisconsin game 2 years ago. Minnesota was heavily, heavily underdogs, and they were able to go in there and win. You look at last year. I believe they were underdogs against Penn State and Auburn. They were able to win those games. You look at just last week, just yesterday. Minnesota, I think, finished as 11-point underdogs in Lincoln, and they're able to go in and win that game. So is it out of the question, especially because I don't think Wisconsin offensively at all is playing well right now. But can Minnesota's offense, a.k.a. Mike Sanford, get these guys, can get a game plan that can kind of expose what's going on with this Wisconsin team? Because this isn't the same Wisconsin team that was here in September dominating, folks. It's a much different team right now, and you just hope that Minnesota's coaching staff comes to play because you know that Wisconsin's is going to.
Okay, so looking forward to this game. I know that Mertz has struggled recently. He came out on fire in his first game. They had 2 weeks off, and he has had more struggles now going forward. But traditionally, I know that Wisconsin quarterbacks have had a lot of success against the Gophers. Do you see that happening this coming week, Ryan?
Wisconsin having success against Minnesota?
No, Mertz having success against the Gophers because he's really struggled, as we've talked about.
Let me ask you this, and Derek knows where I'm going with this. Is water wet? Because Wisconsin quarterbacks seem to have the game of their lives against Minnesota, and it seems like it's been that way for as long as I've been covering the team in the last decade, and I'm sure Derek would tell you it goes back longer than that, but I mean, where if, you know, if those two receivers are still out, I mean, you have to cover Barry Alvarez's grandson, the tight end kid. And that's where the tight end hurt Minnesota against Nebraska. And that's where you just hope that the linebackers can figure it out and be able to cover him. And hopefully Boye Mafe can have some success as well. But seemingly every time the Gophers play Wisconsin and the quarterback is not named Alex Hornibrook, that guy plays really well.
All right. Maybe, Derek, any parting thoughts before we go here?
Well, just to add to that, I think part of the reason behind that is typically the Gopher defensive scheme is 100% put together to try and slow down Wisconsin's rushing attack, which is usually highly touted. And so you sort of go in with the mindset of, we're going to try and slow down the running game and force their quarterback to beat us. And unfortunately, their quarterback usually beats the Gophers. I don't know if I can completely explain why that is, but you know, they usually put him in a position where the quarterback has to make plays, and he usually does. So it'll be interesting on Saturday to see how the Gophers game plan against, because Wisconsin's running, they're lacking that highly touted running back that they normally have. Now their offensive line is very good, but it will be interesting to see how their approach is this game, because if that's the same, then they're going to put their corners on islands. They're going to give Wisconsin some single coverage to throw into if they use the same game plan, and then it will be what Luke said: can Graham Mertz make those plays? And if he can, you're going to see a repeat of what we've seen in the past. But who knows? Maybe they mix it up on defense, and maybe they don't put guys on islands and they mix coverages and things like that. So something to watch for.
All right. So as we close out this episode, I think things to look at, you know, when we started this season against Michigan, my how things have changed. The Gophers end up 3-3. I think Michigan have one win on the season? I don't know. But regardless, the Gophers have an opportunity to go above 500 in the Big Ten, which, you know, that's no easy task. That's something we haven't seen consistently out of this program, but back-to-back years going above 500 would be an accomplishment, even given the current situation with the pandemic, the shortened season, a young and really inexperienced and at times brutal defense. You know, this could be a big exclamation point on what has been a, you know, somewhat up and down season for Gopher football. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll obviously be back to preview the Wisconsin game here that will be on Saturday at 3 p.m. Yeah, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.